Hey, fannies, it's Andrew, half of Hey Kids Comics, the show that you are listening to on the Jedi Cold Network. And I'm not here to present a podcast to you. I'm here to actually talk to you a little bit about an upcoming event. And to join me, Kelly Long, guest of the show, and kind of big kahuna for this thing. So, Kelly, what are we talking about?
Hey Andy, thanks so much. So, what is coming up in the Boonshoff Museum of Discovery in Dayton, Ohio on June 21st and 22nd? We're going to have a geek prom and a geek fest. So, the geek prom section is on Friday night. We're going to have dancing, we're going to have live music. It's 21 and up, and it's $20 to get in. You get a drink, and you get some snacks, and you get to support the museum. That is the fundraiser section of Geek Fest. Geek Fest is the all-inclusive day. It's going to be from 10 to 4. We're going to have kids costume contests, the planets of Star Wars and the planetarium, the planets of Star Trek. We're going to have a new space exhibit that is debuting that weekend of Geek Fest that I can't really talk about because it's super secret, and Klingons and way more.
Super excited about those Klingons, by the way, ladies and
I
gentlemen. Super excited.
Super.
And where do people buy tickets for this bad boy?
To catch tickets for the event, you have to go to www.boonshoftmuseum.org. You can purchase tickets for the event. You can purchase raffle tickets. And if you want to feel like you may, if you feel like you need to make a donation to the museum, you can also do that there too. We are a nonprofit, so this raises money to help feed the animals in our accredited zoo, to keep all of our natural history collections intact, and to be a service to the community.
Also, you get all of that and you get to feel good about yourself. That's amazing. And I'm going to be there hosting costume contests and doing trivia and just generally being a jackanape about town. What's not to
You can't
love?
miss it.
You can't miss it. Come down to Crazy Andy's. Get some pizza. See a Klingon. Don't touch a sloth. At the Boonshoff Museum. June 21st and 22nd. Buy the tickets on the website that I can't remember the.
www.boonshoffmuseum.org.
That's the one, ladies and gentlemen. So now we're going to throw you back to your regularly scheduled programming, but don't forget June 21st and 22nd. June 21st and 22nd. June 21st and 22nd for Geek Fest. Going to Geek Fest because it's the best they got Klingons. So bring on the fun. I added another line to the song. Coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics. What's up, fannies? It's never going to get old. I'm gonna love
No, it
saying
isn't.
it forever.
I love Sammy's 3000.
God damn it. It's already we're doing this already. Listen,
Already.
we're gonna forego the formalities except for to say this tonight. If you haven't seen if you're not one of the people that gave Avengers Endgame $2 billion in the last God knows how long, there's going to be a lot of spoilers. Matter of fact, all spoilers. So stop listening
now.
Now,
go ahead. If you haven't, yes, go out, spend the money. God knows Marvel needs
right? They're
it.
struggling.
Yeah.
Death, taxes, and Endgame are the only thing that are guaranteed in this life.
I mean, $75 million for one actor. They're going to need some help here, kid.
That kid from Iron Man got paid $75 million.
That was the only way they could get him in. It's kind of like when Ryan Reynolds paid all that money to get the picture of Maude on his T-shirt
Right. You mean
out of
B.
his own
Arthur? She
pocket.
has a person name. She's a
Yeah.
human being, a beautiful human
He doesn't have a person
So, but what I mean by we're going to skip the formalities is it's Hey Kids Comics.
Yeah.
That's Cole. I'm Andrew, and with us tonight we are wonderfully pleased to have the mother base themselves.
Yeah, the Wonder Twins Powers Activates show. We got to talk about that name. Aaron and Danae are here. Guys, hi.
What's going on?
We've been waiting a long time to have this show with you guys since the last time we talked.
That's right.
I think we made a promise.
And this, I don't think it's irony, but I don't know what you call it, but this is one of those great coincidences where it's a nice even number, the 310th issue of the show.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Nice.
I think we
nice.
Call that Schadenfreude. Look it up. You'll know what it means. We all share in this pain together.
Is that the thing that Volkswagen used to say?
Yes. Yes.
That was perfect, Nugan. I'm sorry.
So tonight we're talking about Endgame. Everybody's talking about Endgame. The world is talking about Endgame. So we are going to spend the next hour talking about Endgame. I do want to
point out that we threatened very heavily to do a three-hour episode.
Oh, I think that eventually this is good. We will have talked for 3 hours about Endgame at some point.
That's right.
In this whole thing, but I want to go straight to Danae because what was that? Excuse me, Mother Base. What? Because here's the thing: is Aaron and Cole and I come from this from a place of a comic book background, and we've talked about this with all of you before on the show. Mm-hmm. But I have now been referred to as a cyborg and heartless because I went to see Endgame and my response was not, you know, a Sally Fields, yep, Steel Magnolias level of breakdown during the movie.
I had somebody tell me the same thing. It's like, what is wrong with you? You didn't cry at all? It's like, no, not at all.
No, because like I...
What, Aaron? My heart's breaking.
Because the three of us, this is what I told Danae, but now that in reference, all three of us are like the Dark Knight Rises Bane of comic books, where, you know, we were born in it, you know, and by the time you saw it, it was blinding. That's where we've been.
I was more choked up by Scott Lang's refusal to try some eggs than any other part of the movie, just because that was the good-looking bowl of eggs.
Oh, my God.
It was a good-looking bowl of eggs.
Was that not a good-looking bowl of eggs?
It was a sassy bowl of eggs, it was.
But no, how did this one hit you in the feels?
Well, this is even harder for me now because Aaron and I we talk about everything all the time, and we've been limiting our discussions because we wanted this to be the first time we hear each other's reactions.
Okay.
We have talked at all.
Okay.
So I didn't know that Aaron didn't cry, so now I'm going to be crying because of that.
No, I was talking about Endgame. I was thinking about how the first snap took place. I'm sorry.
You didn't cry in Infinity War, but you cried in Endgame.
No, not at all.
Okay.
So what about the sassy eggs?
You didn't even cry when the taco fell?
No, not really. We'll get into it. You tell your part.
Okay. Everyone who's ever listened to either our show or your show when I've been on the show are very aware that I don't actually read comics. The comics I do read, no one who listens to the show reads. So, to be fair. And Andy and I were just talking about, it popped up on my Facebook memories yesterday. It was the first time I watched Winter Soldier because he had told me to prepare for Age of Ultron.
That's right.
And I had no idea that Bucky was Winter Soldier. And as I'm watching it, I texted Andy and I was like, oh my God, it's Bucky. Like, I had no
Meanwhile, 97% of the audience were like, you know, that's Bucky.
You're like, yeah, fucking. I had no idea. I'm watching it on DVD years after its release. Anyway, so while you guys go into most of these movies already knowing what the outcome is going to be, I get to be surprised, and it's exciting. And
it does kind of suck. That does kind of suck when you kind of already know where it's sort of going, kind of thing. Oh, surprise.
I was going to say it's kind of an enviable position that you're in today because
that's what I told
you
her.
Do get to go in and be one of those people who doesn't have a fangasm when we get Smart Hulk.
Yeah. Or hate it. You know, one of the two.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the even rarer things, like even people who don't read the comics, they've been invested since, it's actually been 11 years today, because we're recording this on May the 2nd, and Iron Man came out on May the 2nd, 11 years ago today. And I did not see that movie until like maybe 5 years ago.
You're not the only one.
I held off. I was not interested. I was very much a DC girl at the time. I had little to no interest in those movies. So I had to play catch up. And between being on Rediscovering the Magic with Rick, where we did a series of Marvel movies, so I had to watch them for that. And then last year doing the Road to Infinity War with Aaron, I have now seen every Marvel movie at least twice. I've seen Thor Ragnarok probably 50 times because my daughter wants to watch Hulk and Thor Ragnarok every day. So, yes, coming into this movie, like, honestly, I knew there was two people we were going to lose because they didn't renew their contracts, didn't know how, didn't know when, but not a huge Tony Stark fan, and yet it still hurt really bad. But I think that's because they pulled a sucker punch and gave him a kid.
They figured it out. The old equation.
That's one of the things that I was told to Andy once he finally got the chance to see it after I had. I don't know who I love more, Smart Hulk or Tony Stark as a dad.
It's like I have struggled with liking him the entire time I've watched these movies. I've always just been like, ugh. Like, I'm not a fan of Robert Downey Jr. I'm not a fan of Iron Man. But they gave him a position where I like him, and then he died. So, awesome. Right as I like him, then they're like, P.S., he's gone.
Hey, Danae. Welcome to comic books. That's the way. That's unfortunately the way that comics work. They finally figure it out, and they get you right up to the point where you really like somebody and you're invested, and then they kill them off. That's
hashtag Sue did me.
Oh my god, really? That they want to go dark. They should go real dark in DC and just do an identity crisis movie.
God.
That's another show. So let's walk this thing through. Aaron, what were your first impressions like when the movie started, coming out of the last one?
All right, so like the movie starts, you're talking about like the beginning scene, like where it's with Hawkeye and his family and all that stuff,
like,
right?
Just that whole opening scene. Keep in mind it's a 3-hour long movie, but like that whole like lead up to like the act one break where we figure out, oh damn, like we're screwed, like right then, like how did that feel? Like, what were your key points in there? What felt good?
Man, that's a good question, man. I liked how Hawkeye's family, I mean, you know, they wrote that where they die and it turns him into I don't know, does his character have a new title?
Ronan,
thank you. Went completely blank. And he turns into that, and he's like a, you know, a bloodthirsty hitman kind of guy. And I was like, you know, that's kind of a cool little beginning there, kind of thing. Man, just the beginning of, you know, the beginning is the build up of the anticipation. The middle is like sort of the play out of the story, and then you got the conclusion that's the end, right? You know, I'm
Aaron, that's how a story works. Yes,
exactly what plot is about.
I almost wish that I'm the last person to ask the opinion, because I don't want to be the Debbie Downer of the show.
No, come on. Oh, now I want to hear this. Let's go.
Whoa.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
render
under Caesar what is Caesar's. Let's hear what you got, buddy.
Yeah, all right. Just to start out. That, you know, it's been an amazing journey. It started in what, 2008 with Iron Man? and it's gotten to this point. So some people in this world actually literally grew up at like the age 10 and made it all the way through this point with this whole thing being in their life. And it's got to be an amazing experience to be able to live through that. I mean, nothing in cinematic
history. That's a very good point.
Nothing in cinematic history has ever come close to something like this. This has really been an amazing journey. And, like, we should just be happy that they've finally focused and put comic books into movie form, into quality movie form that we can all enjoy.
I really feel like you're setting up to, like, break up with me. What's going on here?
With that being said, I didn't come out of this movie film very good.
Okay, what does that mean?
Do you just want to be friends with the movie, or
I just like, when I left the theater after seeing Guardians, I was like, ooh, I'm going to buy this movie. When I left the theater after this one, I was like, I liked Infinity War better.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you necessarily.
If you buy this movie, though,
you get more for your money because it's 3 hours long.
No, you're right. Now, it was definitely – and I took my back pillow with me, too, so I can make sure I can get through all of this because I did IMAX, and they didn't have reclining seats. I didn't think ahead of time. It was all a big mess. But anyways, yeah, no, I thought it was I thought the time-jumping stuff was convoluted. I thought the plot was kind of thin. There was moments I really enjoyed that I had a good time. I thought the humor was good. Good. Well done. Dude, can we talk about how Thor has literally become the freaking awesomest character that they have developed between Thor and Endgame? Like, I absolutely, especially now, this version of Thor is my most favorite Thor of all Thors.
But see, this is the exact same thing that I'm talking about with Iron Man. Is like, I hated Thor until Ragnarok, and I loved him in Infinity War, and then they just turned him back into a dude bro I can't stand.
I loved the Big Lebowski Thor.
Well, I think as far as Thor's story arc goes, right, and in the movies, Thor was foisted upon to become a hero.
Sure.
You know, he's voiced many times in the movies that he didn't want that. He said he didn't want that responsibility. He wanted to party. He wanted to, you know, hang out, and he didn't want the responsibility of being the king or the hero.
A spoiled child.
He wants to go hang out with his buddies.
Yeah. And that's what he's done throughout the movies, is hang out with his buddies. If you watch, whether it's the Warrior 3, whether it's the Guardians, whether it's his buddies on Earth, whether it's the Avengers, he's his best self when he's just hanging out. So,
I love him and Rocket so much. I cannot express this. I need them to be in movies together, and I want to give them my money to see this.
So when,
buddy
cop movies.
Yes.
Please. So God.
When Thanos broke, you know, he felt a responsibility and a duty to take it to Thanos, and when he couldn't do it, that just broke him. And he decided he didn't want that responsibility ever again.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling of that depression and letting your beard grow out and, you know, drinking beers.
Gaining about 40 pounds.
Drinking beers with your rock buddy and your bug buddy.
They're playing video games. I loved it so much.
But yeah, that was good.
I see like it being
Do you know how bad I wish I had Thor to come talk to somebody on like Xbox Live and tell him that he was going to find him and do that?
He's so cool to Jay and Silent Bob there.
Yes.
I was so sad. I loved him after Ragnarok and all these years of me not liking him, and now I'm back to being like, ugh. Like, that's just frustrating for me.
I don't think that's going to stop, though. Like, I think that now that he's gone back to what he... Because the thing he loved, you know, the reason that you liked Ragnarok, one of the reasons was because he was doing what he wanted to do. Like, you know, the director and all that, they kind of leaned into that, where it was more fun because of that, right?
Right.
And I think we're going to get back to that, especially if they let James Gunn write, and he's in Guardians 3, which I can't see a reason why he wouldn't be.
Oh, God, I hope so.
like they've
that would be amazing.
They've kind of set that up.
Asgard.
So do you think we might get to see Thunderstrike?
Maybe. Maybe.
Because, you know, he used to be Thor, but now he's not.
Oh, God damn it. Are we doing
another
this again?
Gripe.
Thunderstrike.
Another gripe about this movie. They did not have Hulk smashing anything, and it drove me nuts.
Like, no, I totally
agree. He did a little gratuitous smashing.
A little smash, like when he was like, I'm going to half smash. You know, that was nuts. I wanted to see, like, World Breaker Hulk come out or something like that. You know, when that building was collapsing down on him, I was still expecting him to pop out and at least, you know, go one-on-one with Thanos again. But it didn't happen, and I was really disappointed with that.
I don't like Kelsey Grammer doing the Beast version of Hulk either.
Again, this is where we differ because of the comics, because there has been a substantial portion, well, not even Grey Hulk, like Smart Green Hulk, there was a substantial portion of Hulk, of the Hulk's comic book runs that were
Peter David years that gave you the Smart Hulk, where that happy medium between Banner and Hulk was finally met. And there was some really fascinating stuff done with that. I mean, granted, it's Peter David, she got no complaints.
I liked it. I wanted some smashy, breaky, kicky, punchy Hulk.
I don't disagree with that. I would like to have seen that too.
I see where you're coming from with that. It's not where I personally saw it. I was just excited for Smart Hulk, so I wasn't even really thinking about the lack of smashy Hulk.
But do you remember that first initial feeling with the first Avengers when the Chitauri Beast was coming down the thing and he was like, you know, I'm always angry, and he turns into Hulk and then he just smashes that thing.
That was
oh my God, that was so freaking awesome, you know, kind of moment, and I was wanting that. But I didn't get that. I'm sorry.
Well, and the thing about it is, with a cast of 600 different characters, unfortunately, then had we all got everything that we might have come to expect by now,
but he was one of the original six, and you figured he would get a bit more time on there. Oh well.
But I think in this case they really let Ruffalo shine as both.
I bought some of that
Banner and Hulk simultaneously.
Well, I thought it was great.
I mean, no, it's perfect. It just buffs out so nicely. Ruffalo shine, of course.
Ruffalo shines.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a pitch.
I stopped using Kiwi after I found Ruffalo shine.
I got a pitch. My pitch is this. I now want a Ronin movie set in that 5 years, directed by like John Woo.
Oh.
Where it's just God. Yeah, where like old John Woo, like Hard Boiled the Killer John Woo, where it's just him wrecking whether it's the Yakuza or the Hand or whatever, just that's the movie I want. Lots of white doves, lots of Chinese like shurikens, lots of swords.
Well, let's talk a moment about the character Ronin, or the, you know, this. In many ways, Ronin becomes the most sensible reaction given the nature. Clint Barton, you know, was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
He was an assassin trained by S.H.I.E.L.D. prior.
Yeah, who then becomes a member of the Avengers. Thanos comes along, and, you know, we touched on earlier about the scene, you know, at the very beginning where you see, I love the fact they didn't feel like they had to show you what happened to his family. We all know exactly what happens if you get disappeared from existence. And it was so perfectly and creepily blocked where you don't see them turning into dust.
Right.
But you know that's, you know, the proximity. There's nowhere else they could be. The, you know, shooting the family where, you know, the wife and kid are at the picnic table. And there's nothing but open space around them for dozens and dozens of yards in every direction. There's no other thing that could have happened. And for him, you know, that's where he's going to go, is there are people who were blinked out of existence, and yet people who should have been blinked out of existence. And he's going to make it his duty to do what Thanos didn't.
Can you
– And I,
go ahead, Danae. Go ahead, Danae.
I feel like that's one of the strongest points of the film as well, because they throw us right back into it, because – it's exactly where we left off, like in that like high emotionality where we just lost everyone, but it's also been a year. And so for us to sit down in the theater and be thrown right to the snap, but in a way that affects us because he's an Avenger, and it doesn't have to do a whole movie, even though, like you're saying, it would be so cool to see a whole movie of him being Ronan. It doesn't have to do a whole movie of explanation. It's like, he loved his family. They are gone. That's all. You needed this 5-minute scene of explanation. And it was just brilliant. I thought it was such a great way to start the film. I was crying immediately. Oh. And it puts you right back into that emotionality so that you can get into a post-snap world.
It was a good start.
Well, also, if you look, he's got the ankle bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on house arrest out there with his family. The pacing from Jump Street, right? That whole scene was paced, blocked, and shot like a horror movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was very little soundtrack.
I was very surprised that they used blood in some of the scenes. I was like, whoa, Disney, stepping up.
But that whole first scene, that setup was a horror movie. That's what it was blocked, shot, and set up like. The way that the cameras tracked, the long distance shots. Like, so you were immediately brought into this. This is a world of pain. Like, right. You're in it now. And actually, a lot of it was kind of shot that way. Almost like a, almost, I want to say like an Alien, you know, type feel, or Aliens
very
type.
Very suspense,
Yeah, like an action thriller almost, especially like when they figure out that they're going to go to Thanos' hut and whoop that ass. When they do that, like, again, that's a jump scare. Like, when the door opens, all of a sudden they're all busting through the walls going after him. That's a jump scare. Like, that whole first act is set up like a horror movie.
I was kind of surprised when they killed him off so early. I was like, okay, where's it going from here? This is interesting.
I was too. I was thinking, okay, I guess Thanos isn't part of this story.
Yeah, exactly. It's like maybe there's something else happening in the background that we're not aware of at this point.
And that's like a huge, like, everyone's going into this movie, and especially with no, like, previous knowledge, we're going to this movie thinking, like, okay, we got to get Captain Marvel because we gotta beat Thanos. And then, like, we did, and then I was like, oh. So what's going to happen for the next 2 hours? Like, okay. And so it was just a lot of high emotions, and then like, for the next hour,
yeah,
I'm supposed to feel.
The tension you could cut with a knife after his beheading, and you're like, okay, didn't see that one coming.
No, I was surprised that they, that Disney went with that way.
No, that's the the resolution, and then all of a sudden it's a very Avengers thing to never give up on the idea of saving somebody, you know, even when you're trying to cope with that kind of loss. Like, how do we move on from this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't. Probably my favorite scene in the entire movie is the therapy scene. And it's not Cap.
Oh, yeah.
With Steve Rogers, the Russo brothers, Jim Starlin. So the guy who created Thanos, the guy who's been directing the Avengers movies, and Cap, and that's the director's closure scene. You know, that's them saying goodbye to their franchise, which is pretty amazing, but also that's the realest scene in the movie, you know?
No, yeah.
Yeah, I'll say.
And also the idea of Steve speaking from a tremendous amount of experience, saying that ultimately you have to move on. That's all I've ever done is have to move on. Everybody I ever knew is dead.
Yeah.
Most of them before I was revived. Howling Commandos is all long since croaked, I'm sure. So
almost like the speech Rocket gave Thor when he slapped him in the face really hard.
Yes.
You know, snap out of it. We've all lost somebody. We have to figure out a way to carry on.
And that's not the first time Rocket has, you know, been in that situation where, you know, we've all lost somebody.
Out of everything, Rocket's lost a ton of things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all. His home and in North America as a small furry forest creature who was kidnapped.
A rabbit?
Yeah.
All the Asgardians call them rabbits.
Well, you know, the thing that is, we're kind of jumping Thor Ragnarok to Infinity War briefly. I love the fact that Thor refers to him as a rabbit because as an Asgardian, his entire experience on Earth has been in Northern Europe where there are no raccoons. So the nearest animal to this North American indigenous species that he knows is a rabbit.
No joke. See, I didn't put two. That's a good call there, Cole.
What he does.
That's what I do. I'm an armchair naturist. No, naturalist, not naturist. Armchair naturist is someone who sits around naked.
I didn't, however. Okay, so there were scenes in the second act that I really liked. But overall, I just wasn't a huge fan of the second act because...
No.
Because I felt that entire act was like... I felt the same way about that entire act, thematically.
Are you talking about the heist portion of it?
I don't even know how to divide up the acts in a 3-hour movie without an intermission. But I'm talking about during the time heist. Like, okay. I'd almost draw the line at getting to the time heist, and then the time heist. Where the first act was great. We knew Ant-Man was going to come back, and Scott Lang comes back.
And see, this is where I think it lost me at, is this section you're getting into.
Which section?
The whole, like, the time heist portion of it felt like it sort of slowed down the pacing.
Well, I feel like that was the point at which they were pointing at the audience and saying, you've made it 10 years, so we're going to give you all of this.
Right.
And I felt like it was... help me out, guys. The first of the new trilogy of Star Wars.
The first?
Okay, yeah. Kind of like...
fan service?
No, not so much fan service as... spoilers. We know Han Solo is going to die going into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to make it Han Solo's Ferris Bueller's Day Out. And he's going to get to fly the Millennium Falcon one more time and hang out with Chewie one more time and see his friends one more time. And, you know, all of those, you know, that's the way it felt. Like, the make-a-wish for these guys, literally, was...
Well, you know, I'm going to have to go to the mat with you on that, because to me, what, and I may have just sort of been approaching this from a much different angle, I enjoyed the fact that nothing could be simple. I love the fact that they come and confront and smack down on Thanos and whack his hand off and discover it's not going to be as simple as all that.
Yeah, it keeps on growing and more.
And then it takes 5 years to arrive.
Like, who gets away with the Tesseract?
Yeah, the solution. And then for me, it was fun that they go back to revisit these other milestones in the cinematic universe and reshoot them.
I like I said, there are scenes that I really, really like. But thematically,
because they
could have
just inserted them.
It felt like Oprah. If I was Oprah, I could say, look under all your chairs, you get closure, and you get closure, and you get closure.
That's so right.
What was that, Danae?
They're trying really hard. So we open the movie and it's very highly emotional and it's very like full of action, but we have to somehow get to the end action, but not have like an entire 3-hour action film. So with the high emotionality of the opening and the ending, even though we needed closure and we needed all the little fan service moments in the middle, it almost felt like, weird. I was sitting there like, okay, but what else now? Like,
yeah, same here.
When it's sandwiched with high action and high emotionality, it was just like, I mean, thank you, but also, can we just like move on?
Move on.
Cole, these aren't.
Hey, I'm sure it comes from.
What do you got, man?
Oh, who, me?
No,
I said
Cole.
These are not the joys. We're.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Okay.
I just...
Let me.
Go ahead, Cole.
Oh, I want to touch on one thing that I absolutely want to make sure gets in this. And I'm going to do Drax one better. When is Gamora? One of the most important tenets of the whole plot is that all of the pieces that are removed from time are returned to prevent any kind of paradox. Right down to the fact that I didn't even make the connection initially when Cap's got the stone collection there.
Right.
And he's got Mjolnir. Well, of course, we've got to put Mjolnir back.
Right.
I thought that Cap was now going to be like Cap Thor from now on. So I'm like, oh, well, duh, of course. He's got to put that back while he's putting everything else back. The problem is Gamora now exists out of her own time because she's dead and her past self was never returned.
There's a lot of time problems that they had with this movie. Well, here's the biggest issue I had with it. It's like, if you're familiar, there's like you got the grandfather paradox, and then you have multiple universe theory, right?
All right, mother base, let's hear it.
Yeah, it's like you have to pick one or the other. You can't go back and forth between the two because either you're in one singular time universe or you're in multiple ones, and they kept using both rule sets, and I'm like, oh, come on now. It's like either – oh, what was it? What was one of the scenes? All right, Nebula, for instance, right? All right, in multiple universe theory, Nebula would have been slightly different than the other Nebula, so therefore the communication should have never taken place in the first place kind of thing. But then there's other aspects of the movies that makes you believe that it's singular universe sort of theory, and some of that stuff drove me nuts. Sorry.
It's all right, man. At some point, though, the thing about comics is at some point with guys like Kang and Immortus floating around, that would have been an interesting nod at some point during their time travels.
Oh, yeah. I
wish they would have brought in Kang. That would have been amazing.
Just hanging out, just like somewhere
just like
in there.
Yeah, just like a little snippet. Like how would Thanos in the original Avengers movie? You know, just like a little sprinkle there that lets you know, hey, wink, wink, wink. This guy's in the lineup now.
Yeah, this guy noticed.
You just sort of like wind up seeing somebody conquering.
Or just in there. So like when they're traveling and getting all small and big, just somewhere like in the background, just like, now, you know, it's that old, like as soon as you have interstellar travel, the Vulcans come.
Yes.
Yeah, as soon as you start traveling in time, Kang comes for you.
Exactly. He's Candyman.
He's Candyman.
Guys.
Candy, man.
He's like, guys, let me just step in here and tell you, I've been doing this a long time. See what I did there? I'm Kang, and I'm going to conquer you. Okay,
I'm Kang. I'm sliding into your DMs. yeah, that's right. But all that being said, willingly suspending your disbelief, come on. Like,
you're right.
The scene where Tony meets his dad, the scene where Cap's in the elevator with Frank Grillo and the Hydra Shield agents. Oh, my God.
That was clever. I enjoyed that scene.
I will say, Danae, for your reference, I almost cried at the Soul Stone scene.
With Black Widow?
Black Widow. I came close.
That was my least emotional part of the whole movie.
Well, I think I have the most investment in those two characters because they are not – they don't have superpowers. Like, that's my thing about those two.
Yeah.
They were homies.
Is they've been together forever. They were homies. They fought side by side with gods and monsters.
Yeah.
And
– well, you know, and the thing about it is that – brings into sharp focus one of the things that bothered me about, you know, Hawkeye the Family Man, mm-hmm. when that concept was first introduced in the cinematic universe, because there was every indication prior to, and then it sort of touched on an Endgame, that Clint and Natasha were a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go back to Avengers...
Can we be honest? She kind of everybody.
Well, pretty just, much true. True. She,
just saying.
She's like the Avengers bicycle.
I'm not a hater. Hey, you be. But I'm just, let's call what it is.
I think they were a thing at some point.
Yeah, because in Avengers, she's sporting a necklace of an arrow. Which was the clearest indication that, like, you know, various Centauri and targets and other things. There was another arrow being shot by Clint that hit the mark.
His wiener.
I'm just saying.
Wow.
His wiener arrow.
Listen, I haven't gotten to make a dick or fart joke this entire show yet. So that's true.
I mean, in that scene, I did, like, I didn't, like, tear up or choke up or anything, but I felt it for Clint, like, because I didn't know we were going to lose Nat, but I don't care, but I was just like, oh, for Clint, that sucks. And this is coming from someone who said, I would never in my whole life cosplay that damn character because I hate her guts. I have cosplayed her, and also, every time her face comes on my screen, my daughter goes, Mama, so it's awful. Aww. It's a nightmare. I'm living my worst dream ever.
I do think that's the reason for me is because, you know, Cap wanted his life back. Thor wanted no responsibility. Ooh. Iron Man wanted to solve the unsolvable problem. Hulk wanted what he got, which was to kind of have a yin yang
exactly,
you know, situation. And Hawkeye, Nat wanted to be the hero. Nat wanted to
a purpose.
To show that she was at the end of everything, like Cole said brilliantly on a phone call that we had, to get rid of the red in her ledger, which is 100% true. Oops. And Hawkeye just wanted out.
Beautifully said.
You know, Hawkeye wanted out after his family died. After in his mind, this was all suicide. This was all a suicide mission. No one was getting out alive. Thanos, there was no way this was going to work.
Well, I want to point out also that you're touching on this, Andy, but without the crux of it, which is you brilliantly pointed out that absolutely everybody, or you know, for the most part, the core Avengers in this film, everybody got what they always wanted.
Right.
And you know, you're jumping around with everybody without that main focus, which was everybody got what they wanted, and that was bugging me that, like, wow, I hadn't really thought of it that way. And once I was, something else occurred to me. Avengers Infinity War, Thanos got what he wanted.
Yep.
Oh, very good point. Good observation.
So this is a reversal. Where everybody is getting what they want.
The word.
Cool.
Except Thanos, who's there with his little impotent snap, going, I'm just doing
I have one of those
snapping.
Ones. Dick jokes, I'm going to make them.
It happens to every guy, right?
Yeah, as you get older. Yeah, it happens. You got to get some hips.
Actually, you know,
throw it to the hips commercial.
Sodas. I think in the 70s, that was actually a soda, impotent snap.
Jesus.
It didn't last long, but it was like Rondo. It only lasted a couple of years.
I'm trying to get us back. I'm trying to rein you.
No, you're here. Let me help.
I was gonna throw it to you to help me out here.
So, in order to get us to obviously the last act and to get us to the resolution, because I struggled in the middle, and one of the things that I looked at back, I mean, even watching it, I was looking at it this way. For any Doctor Who fans,
I know you're going to say.
At the end of Tennant's last season, he went back and said goodbye to all of our favorite characters.
Right.
And you knew that it was the end of an era nothing was going to be the same again.
I cried a lot.
Yes. And so for me, like, we already knew we were going to lose people at the end. And that's gut-wrenching enough. So let's go back. And I don't mind, like, the fan service and the getting to see characters again, like getting to see Natalie Portman again, getting to see Thor's mom. Like, those moments were, they they were fan service. I've heard a lot of people complaining about it, but I really looked at it like this wasn't just a movie. This wasn't just one of the Avengers movies. It was literally the end of an era. It was the end of a story arc that took 11 years. So I'm okay with going back and saying goodbye to some old friends. I'm okay with fan service.
It's expected, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, it would be, how disappointed would you be if it didn't do something like that? It'd be insane. Why?
How much more effed up are you going to be at the end when the man who started it all dies? Because you didn't get any happy moments. All you had was killing, killing, and fighting. You needed those happy, touchy-feeling moments in the second act so we could get to the third act where we're going to get bashed over the head with our emotions again.
Captain America actually cussed in this movie. I was shocked.
That's my least favorite part of the movie. I've told everyone. Oh, it's upset me.
Danae, I've got it.
Andy made a great observation on this as well.
I've got it for you.
He was battle hardened.
Well, no, it's not even that. You're right. Right? He's a soldier. He's battle hardened. So after this, the first Thanos snap, right? After everything, everyone's broke. And you can see it, right? He's not Captain America anymore. Like, he shows up at Avengers Mansion or Avengers Compound, whatever they're calling the, you know, the airstrip that they live in. After you can see even Captain Marvel's like, you know, this isn't the only place this is happening. There are 1,000 other worlds that now have half their population too. You know, all of this stuff is happening. Everybody's broken, including Cap. But he's Cap. You cannot know that the only way Cap is so strong, that the only way that you know that he's broken is because they're showing you he's cussing.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, because he's never going to break anything. That observation blew me away.
Yeah.
That's how I felt, too, when I saw it. That from all the trauma that he's gone through, you know, he's just he's battle-hardened. He's gone through so much crap up to this moment that it's like, you know, he's not worried about holding that virtue any longer.
Well, he's not holding back anymore.
Yeah.
That's what, like, you see. None of them are holding back anymore. You know,
and that makes me feel, like, way better about that. So you're right.
Because you notice because that once it comes back around, he doesn't cuss anymore after the resolution. Like, he's not old man Cap sitting on a bench like, Shitty McShitterson's, look at my ass. He's like, you know, he's lived his life now, his best life now.
Let's go to Tank Town.
He's got Werther's Originals. He's got that awful beige jacket. Like, he's done it, baby. So,
he's got the high waist pants.
Yeah, God, we should all be so lucky. But you know, he's unbroken.
Speaking of old Cap. How brilliant is it that this is how the levels of Cap would have aged after nearly a century?
It's throwing some wrenches into the time continuum, though. It drove me nuts.
Well, why couldn't he have figured out a way to reverse the serum?
All right. I mean, well, is he in a multiverse or is he in a singular verse? It drove me nuts. Okay, so because if he got hooked up with her, that means she didn't have the daughter cousin thingy that he made out with in Winter Soldier, right?
The daughter cousin thingy, Sharon Carter.
Yeah, thank you. Whatever you want to call it. So she couldn't have had that.
Didn't have no sister wives over what with on them.
Well, at this point, he just turns to the damn Planet of the Apes saga.
Listen, because willingly let it go, willingly suspend it.
But here's the problem, because if that's the case, if that happened over here and this happened over here, old man Captain couldn't appear over here. You know what I'm saying?
Old man Captain can do whatever he wants.
A giant smart Hulk and a man that built an Iron Man costume in a cave built a time travel device based on a guy who can shrink down and go to a place called the Microverse. You're worried about Cap's timeline.
Man.
Valkyries and wizards.
Aaron, this is the hill you want to die on?
This is what you've chosen. Here's my problem. This is your evil fucking Jima?
No, it's almost like my dyslexia, too. It's like if I'm reading something and it holds, Like, if I can't make heads or tails of something, it's really difficult for me to move forward and progress. So the same thing happens with movies, too. If there's things that I don't quite figure out kind of thing, I get hung up on that, and it's really hard for me to sort of let – I'm like a pit bull. I'm like a little tiny aggressive pit bull that holds on to things for no reason other than it bite it. No.
You're like one of those pit bulls with a face full of porcupine quills
because
you wouldn't give up.
Yeah, you're Mr. Worldwide.
I'm just going to keep making jokes about how the fact that you're Pitbull the singer from the rest of this show. So, buddy.
I didn't know enough to do that. So,
by the way, I want to make a reference. This is not about the movie. Okay, so remove yourself from that. For those of you that don't know, and our listeners that haven't listened to it, last week on this show, Cole rewrote the entirety of the theme song to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and rapped the entire thing on the show, and it was amazing. I just wanted to put that back out there because I'm so floored by the fact that I kept thinking it was going to end, and it kept going for the entirety of the theme song.
Very nice, Cole.
Yeah, it was very nice. Okay, now that we,
I did every verse.
I'm not sure what timeline it was in. I'm not sure about the grandfather paradox and how that applies to
Let me give you a pit bull moment. I'll give you a pit bull moment to help Aaron out here.
Thank you.
Okay, it's great you had Korg and Mick and Valkyrie and Asgardians now setting up shop in an unused section of Norway, apparently. Okay, last time we saw Thor with any other Asgardian, almost to a man, they were dead. And it was bugging me that you didn't know. Oh, that's right. Did they split up?
They did.
I think they split up.
I think Valkyrie took the survivors and got away before Thanos actually attacked the ship.
But I don't think that takes your...
But we didn't see that on screen, did we?
I think that destroys
your theory, Cole.
What I started to think about was Heimdall was there. Heimdall gets killed by Elfie or JoJo or one of
whichever Backstreet Boy decided to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah. So Heimdall would have already known what was going to happen, even his own death.
Would
have used the dark magic to send everybody else. Only a handful of Asgardians remained behind to fight Thanos' minions.
Yeah, stick that in your grandfather's paradox.
And that's why Korg and everybody else get to be on Earth and set up shop in New Asgard. And
so you're saying it wasn't just Hulk that got Rainbow Bridge to somewhere.
Right.
I think that Hulk was the last one to be sent out. The Hulk stayed behind to help fight Thanos.
That makes sense there, Cole.
And that's why everybody else was back on Earth. And, in all fairness to Korg and Mick, they were, thrown unwittingly into gladiatorial battles for however long before Thor showed up and ruined everything for the Grandmaster.
Right.
So I think they deserve to hang around all day and drink beer and
play
Fat Thor and play video games.
So, Danae, the question from before the grandfather paradox happened, of those scenes where we got to go back, we got to, revisit those movies because those movies, Aaron and I and Cole to some extent, because you've been doing this show as it pertains to these movies for so long, right? Which one of those hit you the hardest, and which one did you like the most?
So, I'll start with which one I liked the most because it was really brilliant. Cap fighting Cap.
Oh yeah.
Disclaimer, I'm the only female on this show right now,
and most people assume that
I only go and see these movies to see these men shirtless, but as the men on this show know, I have very little attraction to 90% of this cast. The only time I ever thought Chris Evans was attractive was when he had his daddy beard, and it's gone in this movie. However, I've always loved Cap. I've always loved his storyline. The first Captain America movie is one of my favorites. So to have him fighting himself, like, he's completely, like, there's no way he can beat himself. He's completely evenly matched. And despite my hatred of all shirtless, body, whatever of these dudes, the America's ass thing was too good.
That was brilliant. And it truly was America's ass.
Yeah.
He was America's, and it honestly might have gone on like a little much for me, but I always do that thing where it's like Marvel movies have like that hokey fun humor to balance out the like battles and stuff. But I loved that scene. I just like, I don't know, I wasn't expecting it. And when we were watching it, it really matters who's in your audience. And we watched it on a Saturday morning. It was a cereal party at Alamo. And unbeknownst to me, several of my friends had bought tickets. So it was an audience full of people that I knew. And like when you have a good audience that cheers and claps and laughs and cries at the same time, it makes your viewing experience so much better.
Real. That's why I love going on opening nights. Because on opening nights,
it's like,
true fans are going to be
true
there.
True fans, right. Yeah. So like they're... that scene, like everyone was like, oh yeah, like cheering, and it was so awesome. So as far as like the flashback scene, that was my favorite.
It was a good scene.
And going into the one that hit me the hardest, again, like I was not expecting to be broken up about losing Tony. I thought we were gonna lose him in Infinity War, and we didn't. And so I'm like, dude, like your contract's up. How are you gonna die? But then they added this moment where he's talking to his dad about himself, basically, and I'm finding myself like, as we're going through the whole movie, building this emotional connection with him. And so that moment where he got to go back and see his daddy, that was important, and that was awesome. And you know, Cap didn't really get the moment with Peggy. He got to see her, but you know, we get the end where he wraps up life with actually being with her. So that, in hindsight, wasn't that cool, but man, Tony getting to talk to his dad, and I kept wanting him to say, Tony's a good name. Like, I was waiting for him to say it.
Yeah, my favorite part of that scene is when they hugged, and then Tony looks dead down the barrel of the camera and goes, oh boy, and then the Quantum Leap music plays. That was my favorite part.
I do love, though, when he's hugging his dad and he's saying, thank you for everything you've done. And then realizes he can't, you know, he's painting himself into a corner for our country. I'm like, that was brilliant. And the fact that they invoke Arnim Zola without ponying up for Toby Smith.
Right.
Because at this point, you've seen damn near everybody anyway. We don't have to see every single person who's ever been in a Marvel movie.
Right.
I'll tell you what my favorite part of this, of those flashbacks was, and it was the most unexpected one for me. You'd expect it to be the nod to Winter Soldier, since it's my favorite, or, you know, or the Tony Stark and his dad, or the Cap and Hank Pym thing with his sweet, sweet 70s hair. God, it was beautiful. It was the Thor scene, because I didn't like those movies that much.
No, me either.
But God, like, getting that closure to talk to his mother, and just her being able to say, it's okay, man. Like, you're okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm proud of you. You, whatever's going to happen, you know, is going to be okay, was like, hold, that one almost got me too.
And the thing about it is, you still got the humor in that scene, like when she first encounters him and he's like, oh well, I wear this all the time, it's my favorite.
Yeah, that was, like, for me, you know, that was hard. And when he sees Jane and wants to go to her, or when he's like, the moment he realizes, oh God, this is the day that she dies. Like, I'm here to talk to her the day that she dies. It was like, damn, like, wow, you guys made this relevant.
it gives him this sort of post facto opportunity to have closure and to, you know, all the things I wish I'd said sort of syndrome.
That's why they looked under their chair and they all had closure.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
You get closure. You get closure.
You get to say Hail Hydra in an elevator.
Cute.
By the way, I have to say, because everybody keeps invoking, like, you know, Dene grabbed my America's ass, and you just invoke one of the things that I was reflecting on, whether by accident or design, this gave us cinematically the opportunity for the one thing that made Captain America fanboys shit their pants a year or two ago.
Yep.
Was that one panel that was all over the freaking internet forever, and everybody was like, oh, I'm done with Captain America. It's all right. Over. And then they're like, oh, it turned out it wasn't as bad as we thought. It's not all over. Shut up. But to actually have that panel, in a sense, realized on screen, Captain America saying, Hail Hydra. It was the biggest, most beautiful. Up yours, fanboys, for being a bunch of babies.
Well, but they bait and switch you so well, too, because he gets on this elevator, and the arrangement of the elevator is exactly the same as Winter Soldier, and you're like, oh, yes. Shit, yes. It's about to go down. And you can almost see the clock ticking in Cap's head where he's like, I don't have time for this again.
Because he's looking around the room, spotting everybody like he did in the first time.
So he's just like, screw it, Hail Hydra. And they're all like, what the hell? And then he just walks off like, I just cut 5 minutes out of my life that I didn't need to use to get this thing out of here. It was the smart play.
And you also had the brilliant irony that this is future Cap, who already knows absolutely every person in this elevator, right. Hydra agent.
Yep.
It was great. It was, I mean, that was fantastic. But, okay, so we're going to go long anyway. That's okay. We'll take 15 more minutes. Let's talk about the climax. Let's talk about the end, because we got to get to the end.
I already did.
You already climaxed? Sweet. Sweet.
Here's one question that I got to know. What do y'all think? Okay, so, like, Captain America has to return all the stones, right, which is where we're at. So when it comes to the Soul Gem Stone, whatever you want to call it.
Soul Train,
Soul Train. Woo, woo! That's when you knew the cartoons were done. Does that mean Nat's back?
No, because she...
No.
The same way Gamora's not back.
Because he returns, he's got to return it, so does that mean you get a soul back if you return it?
It's not the pawn shop.
It's like Target, right? You take it back, and they give you something.
It's like Target. But the thing is, Cap himself... Cap himself did cut store credit, but Cap himself never sacrificed anything, therefore he can't have anything back. Plus, it's got to tap his American red, white, and blue ass that he's got to give that damn thing back to the damn red
doll. That's
the
movie.
Yeah.
Is like, he's still, even through the end of this movie, as far as we know, at least through the point at which he grabs Mjolnir and heads back in time, he doesn't know. Nobody has said, hey, Cap, heads up. Red Skull's watching this thing. Like, nobody said that.
He went in blind on that one completely. But you know what? I bet they'd be best friends in the end anyways. They just sit down and have some coffee and talk over.
Yeah, sure they would.
Well, what they did was, ultimately, in the film that hasn't been shot yet, in my head, they reproduced the Twister scene from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh. Yeah.
And then it goes, boy, boop, boop, doo, doo, doo.
Which, ironically, I've never seen that movie, but it made it for the briefest moment till I admitted this.
You've
sound
never
like
seen
I have.
Ted's?
I've seen the X-Men Adventure, but I never saw Bogus Journey. However, I do know that the bulk of it is a wonderful nod to Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal.
Sure. Well, I'll go with that.
Which, obviously, you haven't seen.
But there were...
The Seventh Seal?
Ooh, culture!
So, as soon as that... climax hits, right? As soon as it goes down, it's not, what is it, 45 minutes of nonstop insanity, just from the minute it starts to the minute it's over. It's just balls to the wall, all holes filled with God knows what, just everything's happening.
Let me put this in perspective for you guys. We were at Alamo Draft House, and I was in Captain Marvel outfit, which is head to toe spandex.
Yeah, how comfortable was that?
I was just wearing head to toe spandex. That's what I wore.
I'm a mom, so I also have on two pairs of Spanx beneath said spandex, I have on a wig cap, and I've been sitting for like 2 freaking hours already.
How nice.
In this very uncomfortable outfit. So here comes, like, I've already been crying, and I can't wipe my face because my costume includes gloves. Anyway, we get to the scene, like, where you know this battle is going to be intense and insane, and I am sweating. Like, I do not know how we're going to resolve and who is actually going to die and who's going to what at this point. And I am, like, already bodily fluids, sweating. We've been in this movie for 2.5 hours. I got to pee. Like, it's rough. And then we hear on your left, and I don't stop crying until the end of the movie. The minute I hear that, I'm crying.
Pee? No, that was...
You know what? You know how everybody was advertising, you know, that whole, like, oh, this is the time you go pee, and this is the time you go pee, whatever. Somebody actually lied to me, and it was kind of funny, actually, because they told me, it's like, hey, wait till Hulk goes to the library, and that's – you get, like, 10 minutes, and you can go then, right? So, like, fortunately for me, I went early, like, in the very beginning of the movie, so I was, like, good to go. I mean, I had sake before that, so, like, you know how that goes. So, but I went early on, and I didn't have to go. And thank God, because if I had waited there for that moment where Hulk, which never happened, by the way, it was a complete, you know. But if I really had to pee really bad, that would have been, like, I would have been so mad to come to find out at the very end of that movie, like, that scene never took place. I would have said for us, gone after for revenge on that one.
I honestly forgot. So here's... The movie is so well crafted, you know, that I honestly forgot enough the movie because I was so involved in the movie at that point that Strange and Panther and Spider-Man and, you know.
Oh, when they all pop out there at the end?
Yeah, that they were even involved in the Marvel Universe. I was like, how are they going to win this? And then all of a sudden... Everybody, like an army of wizards and Wakandans, and I'm just like, Guardians.
Danae, I have to know because we haven't talked about this. How excited were you when you saw freaking Chaka? What's his name? Chitara. Damn it.
T'Challa.
Yeah, thank you.
T'Challa?
Yeah, whatever.
He called Black Panther.
Yeah,
Chaka was on Land of the Lost.
Dude, I don't do well with names. I'm really bad with names.
Obviously.
Oh my god. So here's another thing that's like the coolest thing about like our theater is
how excited were you though?
I was beyond excited. I screamed. I literally cheered out loud. And what's the coolest thing is I wasn't the only one. Like, our audience was so cool because, like, even when Cap got Meow Meow, which is what Aaron and I call Mjolnir.
I stood up at that point. Yes.
People were cheering. And so it was building up that excitement. So, like I said, as soon as I hear the, like, on your left, and I just start bawling, and then, like, I know, like, everyone's coming back. I didn't know they were coming through Doctor Strange's holes.
Yeah, that's the only place to come.
But I was like, because losing Black Panther and losing Spidey for me was the hardest in Infinity War because I had no idea that we were going to lose anyone.
What'd you do?
And so I freaked out. And when Spidey, I think the loudest cheer was when Cap got Meow Meow, but the second loudest was when Spidey came on the screen. I think more than just Chris stood up and jumped out of their seats screaming.
I felt pretty good when he hugged freaking Tony.
Oh God, I lost it. I lost it.
When Cap picked up that hammer, though.
Yeah.
And
did he technically pick it up, or did it fly into his hand?
But there's a scene where it's directly after that, where he picks up the hammer and he goes after Thanos and he runs by Thor, and Thor just looks over his shoulder and says, "I knew it." And that, yeah. I was like, yes. Yes. Like, I knew he was worthy. It.
when he first got it and he started spinning it like Thor does to take off and stuff, yeah. I was like, that was pretty badass.
Well, when he was using that the hammer amazing. And the shield together.
Yeah, they're all like, and just when he knows how to do it. Down, and when he pulled the lightning down, I was like, oh yeah, dude, just for real.
Just instinctively knows how to whoop ass with that hammer.
Course. I mean, come on. I mean, he's worthy.
That was my fanboy moment right there. Like, that made 10 years worth it for me. I know that sounds really hokey and dumb, but
no, I wouldn't.
They nailed everything about it. They nailed his costume. Like, I can't, like, because it looks, Cole, did you notice that it looked chainmail?
Oh, yeah, they added that kind of scale pattern.
They added the scale, mm-hmm. the high collar.
The old school style.
Comes down below the collar. He's got the hammer and the shield, and he's using them at the same time to whoop his ass. Like, he's throwing the hammer, or he throws the shield, and then that throws the hammer, it bounces off the shield, it hits him in the back of the head, and then he catches the shield.
How awesome is that, though, when you see combo moves like that
like,
on cinema?
Oh, I was so excited for that. And then I'll tell you what my favorite, oddly enough, probably my favorite thing in that whole, there were two parts, and I think Danae and I talked about this. One of them was kind of the A-Force realization.
Oh, right. Yeah,
when
yeah, yeah.
All of the female characters were there. And I'm like, that's badass. But the other one was the focus on rescue on Pepper Potts. Like, that was
yeah.
really cool.
God, why? Why? Why do we have to have her in movies?
Aaron hates Pepper.
Why does she have to show up in movies? That's all I'm wanting. It's like, when I see her face, I'm like, Jesus. Why are you there? You ruined Iron Man 3.
Listen, there weren't happening? Any Infinity Stone do, vagina eggs.
Why do I... live this nightmare all over again. Is she gonna save the movie? If she saves the movie, I am walking out of this theater right now. Thank God.
She kind of saves the movie, though.
No, you shut your mouth.
Happened thinking Aaron's hating this. Like, I wanted to talk to you in that moment because I knew you were going.
And that's a great tie back to Iron Man 3. You know, she saves both of those movies.
Oh, you shut your mouth. Tony Stark sacrifices. Like a true superhero.
But if it wasn't
should.
For Pepper Potts, he wouldn't have sacrificed himself.
You can, yeah, but it's not going to change my ways of looking.
That's fine.
It's like, it's like I'm going to see this movie the way I want to see it, and it's, she didn't do nothing.
Here's something that I am going to wow.
I'm going to edit her out.
Because you've been hearing me complain about these movies for 5 years now.
Okay.
After I know this is all three of you had a huge part in making me a part of this universe, so thank you for making me be emotionally compromised.
Welcome.
I've had a really hard time identifying with superheroes that are female, and I was so excited in Black Panther because I love Shuri. I think she's incredible. Right. The Dora Milaje, like, they're all very like incredible characters, but even in Infinity War, like, the scene where she's not alone, where and then the three chicks take on the – it's like, so I was like, ew, girl power, gross, right?
Mm-hmm.
After seeing Captain Marvel – listen, after seeing Captain Marvel, I feel so gross
sad?
For the words that are about to come out of my mouth.
You sappy.
Feel so empowered as a female.
Oh my god.
Good. You should. And I feel empowered as a female after watching that movie. Like, for real.
You know, you know what would have been more empowering is if freaking Captain Marvel beat Thanos.
Why?
No, because
I'm
going
to stop you on that one because.
I want to see that.
I love the fact that this film did not. There's a lot of talk, even tonight on this recording, this about, you know, fanboy service.
Right.
And the biggest fanboy service would have been absolutely everybody walked out of Captain Marvel when that premiered, thinking, well, there's the end of Infinity War.
No,
right. There's Endgame. Captain Marvel's going to show up, kick his ass. That's that. That's why we have Captain Marvel. Her sole purpose is to be. The defeat of Thanos.
I wanted her break.
And the fact that that was not the case, I think, elevated her character even further.
You know, you're right.
I do
it's a better story, but I so wanted her to snap his thumb and pinky finger when she had it. I was like, do it, break it, snap.
Yeah, but the best thing about that was the guns are unloading, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they turn up into space, and you're just like, oh, cool shit. And then she takes down his warship. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
It wasn't like she just showed up and, like, you know, slapped a couple of guys around, and that was it. Plus, one of the things I loved about this is these films are full of nods. You talked about Andy, Captain America's costume.
Yeah.
Bringing in the classic element. How wonderful. She shows back up sporting the 1970s Captain Marvel hairdo.
The short hair?
The short hair.
Yeah, it's so good.
So we get Captain Marvel in her own movie in the modern incarnation, the current contemporary incarnation, and then we get this wonderful nod to the original
Carol Danvers incarnation. So
minus the bare midriff, so we didn't have to go gratuitous, but
Right. So we got it. I mean, everybody got their day in this movie.
And all the women are, like, turning to mama bears, protecting little baby Spidey. They're all making sure that, like, Spidey gets across that battlefield. Like, all the mamas, like, I don't know, that to me, that's why Aaron's like, what's happening right now? Because it's that shocking for everyone, because I typically hate female characters. Yeah, and I don't know if this is Marvel turning into a softy.
I'm actually shocked.
I think that what it is is I finally had female characters I could personally identify with.
Right.
And I don't identify with sexy Gal Gadot with her weak, tiny arm swinging giant sword. But I do relate to Brie Larson looking like a real chick with real world problems, trying to figure out how to handle the fact that her hands are mother effing cannons.
The fact that she can strip a mannequin in under 30 seconds, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. Go back and listen to the Captain Marvel episode.
You ever played with mannequins? That's the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen in the Marvel universe.
She's a super.
She can shield and dress a mannequin. But yeah. I have to. This is Aaron's time travel grandfather paradox for me. You can't strip a mannequin in 30 seconds.
I mean, I don't know. I just.
What did I?
Well, I don't know. I'm just that I had to like I had to as many times as I've been on the show and talked about. Well, I don't like Black Widow. Well, I don't like Pepper Potts. Like, I've had a moment where I enjoyed female characters and I felt like united, and like I finally had that moment that all the other women talk about in these movies. And it just took, you know, 22 movies for me to get it.
Well, the scene, and I think, you know, we got that nod early when we got the Ancient One on the roof of the Sanctum Sanctum.
Oh, God, I didn't.
That was cool.
Was so unexpected.
Because why would Dr. Strange be there when they showed up? He wasn't there.
I was surprised by that show up as well.
That makes
and also,
sense.
What was wonderful about that is to set that scene, the Ancient One is blasting Sartari out of the sky, which is like, of course.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, this was the unseen bit of that battle.
Right.
This was their opportunity to show what other people were up to at that same moment.
She also knew that he was out of his own time. Like, she recognized the fact that, like... Yeah, that was cool.
And to punch Banner out of Hulk.
Yeah.
That was brilliant as well.
Yes.
And I wanted to go real quick on the final battle. That even in the midst of all the chaos, there's still room in the cinematic universe for humor. And I love that, you know, when Scott makes the realization we do have a time portal, pushes the key fob, you know, this massive battlefield, and here's this, you know, novelty horn going off. It was just a wonderful touch.
So, all right, we're going to wrap this up. We've been going for a while, so. Danae, last thoughts, final thoughts. What are you looking forward to? What's going on in your head coming out of this 10-year span.
Well, so now that we got our happy endings and our closure with pretty bows, thank you, Endgame. They also opened up all these beautiful, the Phase 4 or whatever it is. And the reason why I'm so excited is because the Avengers have been the main focus for the past 11 years. And so now we get to kind of go out and see more of the rest of the characters. So Thor leaving with the Guardians of the Galaxy, yes. I don't know if they're going to carry it into the third movie, but please, because that would be amazing. I'm looking forward to more Spidey, but that's a personal
preference. An everybody thing, yeah.
He's amazing. But I just think, like, we have focused so hard. Even all their individual movies were leading up to this. So we focused so hard on the Avengers. I'm like, I love you, Avengers, but I'm so excited to move on and, like, maybe get a Warlock movie. And I want more Doctor Strange and Wong, and like we've seen how amazing all of them can be with the Avengers, but now we get to see like how amazing they are individually. And a lot of their movies weren't as fleshed out as they could have been because they were just leading up to Infinity War, to Endgame. So now we can like see these characters in their full realization, how they're going to be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, despite being a temporary Avenger for these two films. Now we get to see them be them, and that's why I'm excited. Like, now that I have fallen in love with every single one of these characters, I actually am so excited to see their individual stories. And as someone who hasn't read the comic books, I have no clue what's coming. And so for me, I'm stoked. Like, no preconceived notions, just all excitement.
Nice. Aaron, what's up? Talk to me.
All right. Okay, well, you know, as I mentioned before, this wasn't my favorite of all the movies that I've seen. But, you know, there was highlights that I enjoyed. I love the humor, blah, blah, blah. And I'm really looking forward to As Guardians of the Galaxies. Like, now that Thor is with them, I'm like, oh, my God, that's the perfect match. I'm really looking forward to that. Oh, and also, I don't know if we mentioned earlier, but rest in peace, Peter Matthews, for he passed away. God bless you, Chewie. You'll always be loved.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not to be dead.
Well, no. Certainly as the representative of the Rocket Dead Live, I certainly, you know, Peter Mayhew lived here in Texas over the last 15 or 20 years. Met his wife, Angie, at a convention here in Texas where she was to be a vendor that we'd see when, you know, Catherine and I were vendors for many, many years. And in one of those, you know, strange way that people meet other people and fall in love and get married. It's just kind of an amazing thing. He's here as a guest of the show, and then you find out, hey, remember Angie? She's now married to Peter Mayhew. You're like, what?
That's weird.
And, it was just, I heard about it actually over dinner earlier tonight that he had passed. So thanks for mentioning that.
And thoughts and prayers. We'll send
man, Chewie, he changed my life as a kid. There's no absolute. This bummed me out when I heard about it today. Danae contacted me through Messenger, and I was like, "Oh man, that was our tough one, man."
Yeah, yeah. So let's go back to now that you've crushed all. You've ground this show to a halt.
That's what
the team is for. Can you find a grandfather paradox for us to go back and not?
Yeah, you know what? Hey, I don't know much. Don't listen to me. If you enjoy this movie, it is a fun movie. It just didn't live up for me, but big deal. What do I know?
The thing about it is that's why we have a forum like this, because all of us went to see the same movie, but we didn't see the movie the same way.
Exactly.
No, exactly.
Absolutely.
I think Danae and I came along with you too.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. But, you know, Danae, you mentioned having seen it at Alamo Draft House. Catherine and I went and saw it at Alamo Draft House, the brand new one. It's now closer to us than anyone. If you're unfamiliar with this theater, we are very fortunate here in Texas to be the home of the, you know, it, The Alamo Drafthouse is a movie theater that began in Austin, Texas.
I'm thinking in the SpongeBob meme in my brain while you're talking right now, because I'm stuck in Ohio and you get to go to Alamo Drafthouses. So keep going. Know. Feel free. But
Catherine and I, we used to drive to Austin to see movies at the Alamo Drafthouse. Oh, that's how
so
incredible
good.
A
it's
theater
so
it is. Because if you go to a movie theater, especially in this day and age, you're accustomed to there being like a pre-show, you know, pre-packed. That chain is showing in every single one of their auditoriums and every single one of their theaters nationwide, and it's the same movie. Alamo Drafthouse, every movie you go to, if it's a 10 screen theater, there are 10 different pre-show reels,
right?
Each one of them specific to the movie you're watching. We drove to Austin to see Argo, and the pre-show reel was news footage of the Iran hostage crisis.
Such a good
movie. By the time the movie started, you felt you were already in that period.
Wow.
Because you just watched Walter frickin' Cronkite tell you about this.
The actual
unfolding.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was amazing. But
nine.
I was very fortunate as late in the game as I bothered to get tickets, that we got tickets on a Saturday. And we go to see the movie, and the earlier screening would have been in a very small, albeit intimate, surrounding. I opted for slightly better placement in the theater with what little was left in a larger, and it was fun to go see that in a crowd. And the great thing about Alamo Drafthouse is you're not going to have people talking through the show. You're not going to have anybody on their cell phone. And I've been to other movie theaters, and it spoils you. But the most wonderful part of it was we arrive in the theater, and in the lobby are all these life-size stand-ups of all the Avengers.
Nice.
And they had placed in front of the stand-ups as a photo op jars of black powder.
Right. I know what you're talking about.
That's what we had at our theater, too.
With the Wasp and Spider-Man.
Oh, have you done the Google thing?
Black Panther. Oh, my God. That is so brilliant.
It's like a memorial with the candles and everything.
What's a Google thing?
Yeah, like if you go to Google and you Google search Thanos, if you click on the little gauntlet up in the right-hand corner, he snaps and half your search options go away.
That's funny.
And then if you click it again, he snaps again, and he uses the time gem to reverse it, and all your – I think you get like 94 million option search things that pop up, and you snap, it's like 43.
That's
but,
funny.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Well, I can tell
I
you
have
that
to point, I don't remember if we talked about this when we talked about Infinity War, but Thanos' grand scheme is a fool's errand ultimately.
Sure.
Because if his concern is that universally the population is burdensome on the universe itself,
sure.
Having, you know, eliminating 50% of all living creatures means that the remaining living creatures now have exactly the same level of at least biological resources that their predecessors had when there was 100% of everybody.
Right. Dumb.
So like, if you're worried there's too many people for the volume of pigs to make bacon for everybody, now there's half as many people but half as much bacon.
Yeah.
You're back to square one.
Yeah.
Sounds like grandfather paradox.
Bottom line
it's the
is
bacon paradox.
Thanos was
it's
an idiot. Yeah, the bacon paradox. Thanos was an idiot, basically.
I couldn't agree more.
I agree.
He ran the risk of eliminating himself, because if you eliminate 50% of all of the life in the universe,
yeah,
unless you do like you should always do with genies, is be very specific.
Right, except for me.
You might actually snap yourself out of existence.
Monkey Paul.
So, Cole, yeah. I think you and I will probably talk about this at least a couple times more. We probably won't stop talking about this movie. For me, I will say this is as my personal closing. You know, this movie is now third. The four of us did a show, God, I don't know how long ago was it, a year, where we ranked our Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. And this movie moves into the third place slot for me. Right behind Winter Soldier, it's gonna be really tough to rock that out of there. And of course, Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3.
Unironically, the number two Marvel movie for me. And then this.
Unironically, we saw it.
We saw, and the kid was in it from Iron Man 3 at the funeral.
Oh, that's right. We forgot to mention that.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That was the only character I couldn't place. And like, who the hell's that?
Yeah.
I know exactly who he was because Andy never shuts up about that movie.
That's right. I don't.
I was like, people were like, who's that kid? And I was like, it's a kid from Iron Man 3.
I'll wear everybody down. All right. All right. So let's close her up.
It's inevitable.
Let's close her up. I think we've all had our say. I'm glad that this movie exists. I'm glad we're moving on from this.
Well, and thank you to everybody who joined us for the last five episodes What Did We Just See. It's been amazing. The Umbrella Academy, Captain Marvel, The Tick, Shazam, and now in Avengers Endgame. It's been an amazing journey of just like all this stuff that all hit at once. And we can talk about it in very topical real time. Right. Dang. And yeah, do go back to the last issue and listen to me with The Fresh Prince of Shazam.
So weird.
The only part I can remember off the top of my head is, was it, I was born in Philadelphia, and that's a fact. Crap. I can't remember my own
name. The fact that he yelled, Andy, give me a beat. Like I'm not a white 41-year-old that lives in Ohio was hilarious. And the fact that he yelled, Andy, give me a beat, while his dad was on the show.
My dad is having to listen to me do the Fresh Prince, doing like, I was born in Philadelphia, and that's a...
And I'm just like, oh, and that's
the truth in the foster care system fit most of my youth.
Oh,
and I'm like, this
Jesus
is just
Cole.
The worst and the best thing that's ever happened on this show. All right,
oh, yeah.
Aaron, Danae, plug
and,
us
and
up.
Join us next week for Foo Fighters, where we talk about Shang-Chi and Fu Manchu.
Oh, yes. Yes. All right, plug us up, guys.
Go for it, Danae.
All right, we are the Wonder Twin Powers Activate Show. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube and SoundCloud. We're at WTPA Show, and we're about to do a giant end of Game of Thrones episode.
Giant. Baby, G-O-T.
Yeah, I'm totally going to have sex with a giant. You watch Game of Thrones, you would actually get a reference, but I won't say it because you don't watch it. So
join us
for the we've wrapped up the MCU. Now our show, we are gonna wrap up Game of Thrones. So
by the old odds and the new,
a tough year for nerds, but join us and you can cry with us.
There you go, Cole. Take us home, baby.
Oh snap! We're coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. And you can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. And be sure, and I am actually going to be not on this week's, if you haven't, go over to DallasOnAir.com, the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. The rant live, except I've left.
Hey, Cole, did you die? Did you just get snapped out of existence? Thanos is back, son of a bitch.
Dang it, uh-oh.
Oh, there he is. He's back now. Okay.
Yeah. I'm back, yeah. So, sling ring, do your thing. Do check out DallasOnAir.com the first and third Sundays of every month for the Rancor Pit Live from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central. Or, sorry, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. And my show, Isle of Toys, on the third Sundays of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central, preceding the Rancor Pit Live.
Hell yeah. At HK Comics Show, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Danae and Aaron, thank you so, so much. And you guys should watch the videos and read what they write because they're super, super funny and super informative.
My God.
You are. Don't start.
I'm blessed.
And join us next week when we talk about Shang-Chi. And we're going to do our best to not be racists, even though the comics are.
Good luck.
Yeah, a little bit.
Thank
sometimes.
So on that note, say goodnight, guys.
Good night.
Good night. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics.